Welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. My name is Austin Chadwick and my co-host is Chris Lucian. And we got a really exciting topic that we've been wanting to share about for a while now. And it's basically a promotion process. And so when I joined the Mob, my first experience is mob programming in an organization more dedicated to it, I was very surprised by the promotions process. So Chris, if you don't mind jumping in and sharing a little bit about what it is and its history. And then, I'll share how my experience was after hearing that.
Yeah. So I think this is the most requested episode. And I think I've always had trouble kind of thinking about how you know, might progress. So maybe I'm going to start with the history of it and then kind of build it up over time. So, a number of years ago, the group went from one mob to multi-mob, and in the multi-mob transition, also kind of structure and how things were done, including promotion process, were in flux. And the number one thing that I think came out of that is early on, we made a decision together that it's all going to be self-organizing and we're going to decide together how it's going to be done and what we need to do. So what we did is we started doing retrospectives about every type of process, and for some things that worked and some things that didn't. But I think one thing that was really interesting that came out of it all was the promotions process. And so, you know, initially we threw around different ideas about how promotions might be done, you know, traditional hierarchical order or some other way. We kind of landed on a distributed system. So this idea that there would be promotion nominations that would then get, you know, aggregated into a histogram, and then, you know, just basically saying, you know, who's the most important person that needs to be promoted right now. And that worked okay at first. And what we did is we just decided, hey, we're going to do a retrospective on this every year thereafter and just change it slightly each year. And so kind of that continuous improvement cycle for just about everything. It's just that this cycle, you know, basically had an annual kind of update to it. And so different changes came along. So then there was kind of a wait factor for the need to promote. So it might be like, this person needs to be promoted, but not nearly as much as this other person needs to be promoted, but they both need to be promoted, like that sort of thing. Then we had this weighted histogram that came out of that. And then maybe the following year, there was this idea that, hey, we're going to take the resulting data and then kind of map the distribution. And one thing that came up that round was this idea that, well, not everybody is taking the time to do the nominations. And so then we essentially made it required to nominate, but you had to nominate, you basically had to like select no one if the nomination was going to go to no one. So that was kind of the third or fourth iteration. And so then now we check, okay, everybody has nominated. People have to explicitly say this person does not, or no one deserves one, right? And I guess, you know, nominating everybody or nominating no one has the exact same effect. And so kind of here we are. You know, I think this year's experiment was just the whole, you know, not changing it because there's so much change in the world right now anyway. And so, you know, just kept going. So that's kind of how we got here today. And the end result of that has been pretty good. So, you know, essentially the people that really need the promotions as far as either contributing or coaching. And I guess I should talk about that a little bit more too. There was also this clarification that needed to happen about what the different roles meant. And so we needed something that was really simple to digest and truthful. And so we kind of had this diagram of the different roles and what you might be expected to do from a very general, you know, 50,000 foot view of what it looks like. And so essentially, if you're in an associate role, then we primarily expect you to be learning constantly and then contributing a little bit. And then in a mid role, we expect you to be learning a lot and contributing a lot. In a senior role, we expect you to be learning a lot, contributing a lot, and coaching a little bit. And then what's effectively our principal or senior principal engineers, which are known as full stacks, are essentially learning and coaching and contributing and developing mastery, especially around things around domain and business and other things along those lines. And so that progression was very strictly outlined in our environment. And then it resulted, you know, in combination kind of resulted in this. And then finally, you know, ultimately the leader has to take on responsibility for fairness of the whole process and all of those aspects of it. And so it's kind of reviewed from the, you know, and then bought into by that leader. And so that's been working very well, in my opinion. I, you know, there have been criticisms, there have been a lot of questions about it, but one side effect I think it has in general is that the more people that you create a good environment for around you, the more nominations you're likely to get. And so helping people becomes kind of the de facto. And I think that's the hope. But also the process is defined by the people who the process is governing. And I think that has had a lot of positive effects as well, and especially in the retrospectives and being able to change it. So that's kind of the current snapshot. So maybe Austin, you wanna talk a little bit about your experiences either joining into that and what that was like?
Yeah, I mean, it was fascinating to hear about it and then be a part of it, because it was, in my experience, a completely novel concept. It never occurred to me that there was any other way to do it other than the boss, the manager, the director, etc. That person just decides, you know, who gets promoted, who doesn't, and that kind of thing. And not only does he decide the process, but he decides who does and who doesn't, right? And so to flip both of those things on its head and say, hey, everyone defines the promotion process, and they every year by vote, so to speak, and by it's anonymous, right? The voting system, right?
It's essentially a double blind, so people can see they can see the resulting histograms redacted from names, and they can see the and they can enter nominations into the system, and then the leader of the organization then creates the histogram and makes the final decisions around everything. So it's not 100% transparent, but it's kind of as transparent as it can be in kind of the current context. And that was kind of the goal. That's what the team strived for when originally designing the process.
Yeah. And so for me, when I joined this, the experience, the impact it had on me was, okay, before it was like, you know, I really try to do a good job, but you have to prioritize your effort, right? You know what I mean? And so, you know, before it was like, okay, well, what is my, you know, if I want the best for my family, you know, I got to do the best thing for my boss. So if he wants me to be like X, I'll be like X. Of course, if it's within reason and all that. And so you're basically trying to find the person you work for and figure out what they want, and then make that some of your top priorities to reach those objectives, so to speak. And so entering it where it's kind of like, whoa, what, you know, what do I even do? You know what I mean? And so, but then seeing the scale of roles, it's like, okay, if you want to grow in this organization, basically learn a lot, contribute, and then basically coach and help others, you know, whatever that means. And so basically be really helpful to everyone else is a way to get promoted. And so it really changed my behaviors. I think one way you put it before, Chris, was like someone just trying to be in the leader's face all the time. Like, hey, look at me, look what I'm doing. You know what I mean? To kind of, you know, get the promotion, so to speak. But now it was kind of more like, okay, how can I really concretely help people in such a way that they feel like they've grown by, me being around, me working with them, whether on the same team or mob or just in the department and the activities we'll do together in learning sessions or, you know, helping people when they have problems, moving from mob to mob if needed. And so it really had a big impact on incentives for me. You know what I mean? And so I think I came in wanting to help people in general, but then it just put an extra fire in that direction. And so, you know, I think it made me more than I normally would put on events to help others or see what people want to learn about and then organize sessions on that. Or I think a whole host of things I'm not sure if I would have done normally. Yeah. The system kind of pushed me in that direction.
It's funny because, you know, I do get questions about, it's like, hey, you know, I'd really like to get promoted. What would it take? And I find myself just saying, well, what impact or influence have you had on those people around you that you work with day to day? And how, you know, how likely do you think it is that they would nominate you? You know, would you say that they feel like you're contributing or only learning? Right. And that conversation just becomes a, you know, day to day in the mob, everybody sees your contribution level, your level of research, how much you help people, how much you coach, how, you know, personable you are, and how likely it is that you will end up working for the good of the team rather than for just the good of the individual. Right. And because that becomes really, it's just very transparent. And so what ends up happening is, I will often coach people to just say, talk to all your peers and just say, ask them, what behaviors would you like to see from me, in order to earn your promotion nomination? Right. And in a way, you know, people, the criticisms, you know, like that I hear from the outside a lot of time are, well, what if people all kind of sign a pact together to always do this, you know, to always nominate each other. And it wouldn't work because it'll be obviously way out of line. And it would be very evident from the trend in the data. And so, and usually the people that get promoted are always the ones that have touched the most people in a positive way, you know, given some level of coaching or something along those lines. And so the people that are building up everyone in the organization are typically end up getting promoted a lot more than the people that just kind of keep to themselves. And you know, I don't think anybody's doing this, but if somebody was to hoard information and push people away, then that the system would react to that, right? And so it ended up being a systematic design in order to have kind of like a pressure valve for, you know, kind of like what you said, that person that's always up in the manager's face, always just kind of trying to show as much effort when being observed and then remove as much effort when not being observed. That's impossible in this case. And so the people that really do make an impact on, through a positive way, those are the people actually getting promoted. And so when I explain this to people a lot, you know, that's why we get the requests for this episode. So, you know, it's been a long time coming.
Yeah. And a couple of things jump out to me that about it as well is that I think anybody who's been at a company or an organization a while have seen the something comes to mind recently from an educational institution where someone did something very public and something that everyone can see and that looked glamorous, but the real help, in my opinion, was it hurt. It hurt a lot of the people in the system, but it looks good. And that from a distance, someone just observing, you know, from on high would be like, oh, wow, that person's really doing big stuff. That's really cool. But if you look at the lower levels, people are like, no, this is either it's like whatever, or it's not really helping me. You know what I mean? And so I think that can be really frustrating in a company to see an organization, see people like that rise. Right. Where I feel like that's harder to do in a system like this, where just doing the showy thing isn't necessarily going to help you. Right. So what I've seen it do is you find out people's real goals and the things they're really passionate about and want to learn. And then you find ways to help with that. And then that's you're really helping somebody as opposed to just doing something that looks like you're helping a bunch of people. And so I think that's one thing. And then one criticism that's come up is, isn't this just a popularity contest that only extroverts are going to win, or, you know, something like that? What's your take on that? I had a couple of responses to that.
You know, so there's a few people that come to mind that have repeatedly gotten promotions that are very introverted. And I think the pattern that I see there is that they're extremely technical and very willing to help you kind of one-on-one. And, you know, so that's been a pattern that I've seen. I've also seen, you know, people that are willing to mob, but are introverted, you know, kind of like Aaron's paper for the Agile Alliance and things along those lines. You know, in that kind of maybe self-described archetype, I will see them still hosting group learning sessions and things like that in order to, you know, to do well in this system. And so I think in both of those situations, you know, you don't have to be extroverted by any means. You know, sometimes it helps, especially with maybe product owner communication or just helping the team get along, right? So like, you know, people may be promoted on the aspects that they can make a team work well together quickly, but they're just as likely to get promoted based on some really deep technical insights or other things, right? So like, you know, contribution comes in many forms, and so does coaching and so does learning. And I think all of those, whether you're introverted or extroverted, people will notice them happening. And so I don't believe from the data that I've seen, I don't believe that there has been any evidence of that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think as far as popularity contest kind of goes, and I think it's just, there's a con in any system that has people in it, right? And it's just, if there's a flaw, it's either all, you know, if it's centralized to one person or if it's distributed, right? And so if the group has a flaw in thinking people are doing great stuff when they're really not, then I guess you'll see that propagate in the system as well, right? So I think it's just harder, right? It's just harder with a lot for everyone to conspire, as you're talking about, or everyone to be fooled, or, you know, everyone just to pick the person who speaks the loudest. From what I've seen, especially in the software industry, it's heavier on the introvert side. That kind of personality often has the opposite effect on a group. Yeah.
Well, also, that reminds me a little bit, and maybe we can come back to it in a second, but I wanted to also talk about the effect it has kind of upward from the leadership level. Mm. So one thing that we added, you know, in one of the iterations to the surveys was essentially people have to type out a story about what behaviors, what an example story of the behaviors that the person exhibited to earn that nomination. And so a lot of the time, you know, a lot of the time when leaders are asked to justify, you know, a person being promoted, sometimes it's just their own personal experience, which is kind of, you know, that person that is popular with only the leader, right, is it's different than it's the person that's popular with kind of a lot of people, and maybe not even popular with the leader, but popular with others in the group. And so the side effect that I've seen here, especially with the stories being written out, is that the leader learns more about the nature of the contributions that the people have, as well as the, you know, once those things are written out, then it becomes much easier to tell the story about why they deserve that promotion and things along those lines. So the underlying narrative and the whole process of promotion actually becomes a lot easier for the things to move in a fluid way.
Yeah, and I can see that from a leader's perspective. It's not like, I can imagine that being in the shoes of having to decide who gets promoted and who doesn't, right? Data can make you feel doubtful about your decisions, right? Yeah. Lack of data or lack of experience, especially if it's a larger group. Where, I mean, how cool is it to have, boom, a whole set of stories and ratings and counts from everyone who, you know, who's on these teams? And I think, you know, it's like, oh, why is this person being promoted? I have like 20 stories. Why? You know what I mean? Concretely saying what they've done to help. And another thing that a critique that's come up, and I'd be interested in your take. I don't know if we've even talked about this before, was the is the system skewed towards those who are on larger teams versus smaller teams kind of thing?
So I hear this one a lot, actually. And so some projects are single mob and some are multi-mob. invariably, it's, you know, so I've seen people get promoted over and over and over again in single mobs, and I've seen people in multi-mobs, you know, not receive a promotion at all and things along those lines. And, you know, I think that those people in those different situations would agree with kind of what had happened. And I bring that up because it's, I don't think that is actually an issue, especially with the dedicated learning time and the, you know, we have kind of lightning talks and other things along those lines that kind of come up. And so, you know, the end result is that the combination of experiences that people have, some people will provide nominations from a distance and just say, you know, I really see that this person is trying to build people up around them. And so I would say it doesn't matter whether or not your primary project or product you're working on is important so much as being able to make an impact on multiple groups. And so that might be, you know, if you have a piece of specialty knowledge, just sharing it as much as possible and offering it to those who need it. If it's just very good generalist skills and the ability to come up to context quickly, then you may end up, you know, kind of visiting other mobs often. You know, a lot of it is just putting in the effort in order to make an impact on multiple people in multiple groups, and while not, you know, taking away from the existing group that you work with. And there's a lot of kind of optional contribution that people can make when the primary focus might be, you know, code and refactoring and things along those lines. But you know, there's definitely other ways that people can find to be recognized by their peers. And so you know, I've seen both situations. I don't actually believe that has really much of an impact besides for me, you know, aside from maybe those people that want more of a chance to be recognized without doing anything extra, right? And so, but, you know, the teams are not static. Anybody can move to another team whenever they want to. And as long as it kind of maintains budgetary constraints, and those budget constraints are maintained, and so people just can trade positions, and sometimes the single mobs are more desirable than the multi mobs, and so it's always easier to get into a multi mob than it is into a smaller mob, and so the end result of that, I think, is that it's very difficult to say that that's the reason that they're not being recognized, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I've seen the same, like, I guess, looking on over from what I've seen being in the system, I've seen smaller single mobs and then larger multi mobs have basically the same distribution from what I've seen. And I think while you don't need to be extroverted, you do need to be, it seems from what I've seen, bold and helping others. So if you're more introverted and you want to help a couple people, then just look for ways to do that, right? If you're more extroverted and you want to host a big event and, you know, be a showman, then go for it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And so I think the way you might strategize might be different depending on your personality type and how big of a team you're on. But I think the opportunity is the same, especially as you said, with the dedicated learning time and training and the ability to swap. You just have to be more, maybe diligent or creative, depending upon where you're sitting.
I think it has to do with both passion and grit, I think. So basically, you know, teaching people is not a one-time event, right? It's yeah. You know, repetition is the mother of learning, I think is the term maybe. And so the idea is that you don't just do it once, but you advocate for a path forward, and maybe it's something that the entire team might need. And so, you know, being a champion and regularly revisiting that and making sure that people are kind of developing, right? And so you know, you work on developing code, right? And that's great, but eventually you need to develop people as well. And a lot of this theory is based off of this idea that the number of new developers kind of always outweighs the number of really experienced developers, because the industry is growing much faster than the rate of retirement, much faster than the rate of retirement, I guess. So what happens is every generation of developers is kind of overwhelmed by the next generation of developers, right? And so if you don't have a system that starkly incentivizes learning and fairness, I guess, then you will end up kind of falling behind. And so, you know, I think that was kind of originally what some of the main design was. And then every iteration of it has been an improvement. And I always make sure to tell everybody, it's like, hey, I didn't decide to make the promotion process this way. I went with what was decided, and the result of that, and it can always be changed. And every year there's an opportunity to change it. And so that has ended up kind of being a really positive message, that it's changeable. And, you know, I'll give you my word that I will be, I will follow it, and then be transparent about when I don't, and then otherwise, you know. So it ends up working for pretty well for us.
And one thing that kind of, from like a continuous improvement and growth perspective, that really jumps out to me about it, and I think it's kind of a sweet spot with mobbing and this process together, is that you often see, especially in a more technical industry like software engineering or anything, that sometimes people get promoted just because they're very technical and that's it, right? You know, and so I'm sure many of you have seen that before, someone who's highly promoted, but their people skills aren't necessarily there, right? And mm-hmm. So I think if you have people skills and no technical skills, or technical skills and no people skills, you're going to hit a roof pretty quick in this kind of process, because you only can go so far with just one or the other, right? And so what I've seen is it really helps like a really balanced person, you know, kind of like the Renaissance person is back, you know, where, you know, okay, people are seeing me as contributing, but to become more of the coach type role and get promoted into that, I need to be better with, you know, emotional intelligence and interpersonal skills and giving feedback and those kind of things. And so I've seen people who may not necessarily decide to work on those kind of things start working on those things, just because there's no other way to progress if you're already a strong technical contributor. And so I think what comes out of it is people who are really balanced. You know what I mean? Someone who has a lot of experience working with people every day, a lot of experience technically, and then a lot of experience with kind of all the agileness and coaching type stuff, and working well with the business and working well with the team. And so it's like EQ plus IQ, yeah. As well, I feel like it builds both. Yeah. And so.
And I mean, that's a really good point. You know, so mobbing, you know, obviously there is a social aspect to mobbing, and being nice to people while you're mobbing is probably a good idea, as well as, you know, being technical and contributing to the mob and not having, you know, having a way to give back to the mob for whatever the mob gives to you, right? And so I don't know if we had talked about our annual goal setting at all yet. But, you know, that process is meant to find these areas of improvement and essentially work towards making those things better. And, you know, and so the annual goal setting happens to have a kind of 360 review component. And some people have basically, you know, given the feedback to their peers about emotional intelligence and the ability to communicate. And a lot of the time their team is asking not, you know, for them to stop learning technical skills and start learning the interpersonal skills. And sometimes that's the right thing for somebody's career, and they need that feedback. And a lot of the time they don't receive that feedback because people are too, you know, quote unquote, polite to give that feedback, or something along those lines. They kind of, in the radical candor scale, it's the ruinous empathy side of things. And so maybe we need to talk about that some other time.
Yeah, I just wrote it down as for a future episode. So I think I have one more thing to say before we closed, and yeah. That is, Yeah, so definitely not perfect. There's no perfect system, right? But I think after experiencing kind of the traditional world and this world, I see a lot of the advantages, and I think it's definitely worth experimenting with if you're in a position where you could influence something like this to happen. And one thing I've seen that if you're in a system like this, don't stop giving feedback just because you're filling out a promotion form. You know what I mean? Because I've seen that before too, where people stop giving feedback to each other because they've done this anonymous thing. And so like, you still need to give feedback, right? Yeah. And so often if I'm writing something that I haven't told the person directly about why, you know, I'm like, I just need to tell them this because they're doing this really well. And I think they need to know that, right?
And there is a big piece of that with the 360 feedback process that I was talking about too, as at least once in a while you do, you know, I guess every 6 months in this context, you get that sort of feedback of what might be holding somebody back from making that decision. And, you know, it ends up working really well.
Yeah. All right. Right on. Well, anything else, Chris? Are we done here?
I think that's it. And I think we'll have another episode on the feedback process and just feedback in general, maybe. And that might go well with this one. So go and listen to that one too. And I think another thing is we're always happy to talk about this and answer hypothetical questions or data related questions too. So.
Awesome. So please like and subscribe. Please give us feedback on Twitter, YouTube, and more. And please share with anybody who you might find this radical way pretty interesting and helpful. So until next time, mob well, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye, everyone.